Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Desert Talk. I'm John Hanford, and I'm changing things up a little bit. I'm seated at about a 45 degree angle. I'm going to try this for a little bit. One thing I've noticed from doing a video podcast, and especially when I'm doing just, you know, whatever solo stuff, and I'm just talking into the camera directly like this, it kind of fucks with what I'm saying, with what I'm thinking, because I'm just looking at myself and I'm just like, oh no, you look worried right now, or you look, just like, oh, I'm becoming more aware of all these little different meaningless facial expressions, or they're not meaningless, but like different facial expressions that I have, and I think that they can distract from like they could distract me when I'm talking, just because I'm looking right at myself. It's like talking into the mirror. After you do that for an hour every week, like, do you ever talk into the mirror for an hour and make a commitment to do that on every just every week of your life? Like, that's completely insane. And sure, maybe it's a little more insane to do what I'm doing right now and just making eye contact with a speck on my window curtain. But you know, it feels a little more lucid. I feel like the thing that would make this, a little more, something that would just really solidify this aesthetic would be just if I pour myself a glass of scotch. So here we go. I got a cup with an ice cube in it, and, this isn't staged at all. But, you know, it just seems like a glass of whiskey, or scotch in this case, just goes hand in hand with looking off camera at about 45 degrees. So stupid. This tastes terrible. What is this glass not clean? There's like a bunch of water. I guess, yeah, because like the glass is clean. It's just water spots, which I guess you couldn't see because of the virtual background, but well, fuck it. Water spots off camera. We're off to a great start here. I'm already drunk and I will be shortly, which I've never done a boozy podcast on this podcast, at least. I had a pod, you know, the first podcast I ever started, it didn't even amount to anything. So it was aptly named Almost a Podcast. And that was just me and my friend, Devin Nigro, in New York. And it was just us drinking whiskey and just bullshitting. We only made our podcast, the format was, we were only going to have it be like 15 or 20 minutes an episode. And that's, that's just not, it's good that we only did one episode, and I don't even think it's on YouTube anymore. I think it got taken down or something. We said a lot of shit on there that we didn't mean. It was just all in jest. It would be mortifying if you were to hear it, and not only mortifying, I think it'd be more cringeworthy. Like, there's nothing really mortifying that a beginner comic is going to say. Because, we started this podcast, we did this little project. We almost had a podcast at the end of 2018, just before I left New York. I think we recorded our one episode in November, and then nothing ever came of it. That was fun. But that's the one time that I've been drunk for a podcast. And it was a good time. It was loose. It was flowing. Maybe that's what this can be as well. Loose and flowing. Anyway, this has been a really wild week. I've decided, I haven't even been drinking that much. I have been smoking a ton of weed. I think I've actually smoked more weed in the last week than I ever have in any other week of my life. I know this because I bought a quarter ounce last Wednesday and already went through it. And that never happen. That's usually it'll take me about a month to get through that amount. And I was just like on a nonstop, just, functional weed bender. Sure. Do I feel guilty about it? No. But I do know, I also know that it doesn't serve me to smoke that much. But I also know that, as far as weeks to smoke a quarter ounce of weed, last week is probably the best week to do it. Cause there was, a big rally in DC at the Capitol where they, one faction stormed the actual building and five people died. And, you know, that's fucking awful, but, it's not like it wasn't expected. And that's what's confusing to me. It's like there's the reaction to what happened is confusing to me because this was all very, very predictable. You see the type of the type of person that gets into queue, the type of and just like how they argue things. They honestly sound like me, but with even fewer facts and more baseless insights. They also don't sound like me because they have a lot of anger and a lot of rage and enough rage apparently to purchase a plane ticket to go there or drive there and then, you know, do it. But like, what did they actually do in the Capitol? Like sure, inside the Capitol building, horrible. They broke shit. They took dumps in Schumer's office and Pelosi's too, I think. But obviously that's despicable. But like, you know, it's about time that we've had a protest where people are finally getting into their primal instincts and just smearing shit everywhere. It's about damn time. How has this not happened sooner? By and large, the whole thing, I heard it was going down or some shit was going down and, you know, like, wow, these people are actually at the Capitol and people are like posting on Facebook all worried about it. And this is before anybody has even died. Look what they're doing. They're rioting. It's like some of them are. Yeah. So my mom called me to, tell me, are you watching the news? She had like this grave tone, you know, like it was 9/11 all over again. And then I'm just like, all right, I hear how this is affecting you. So I will flip on, YouTube, see what's going on, whatever live news coverage is happening. So I turn on the ABC stream and it's just a bunch of people milling around just on the steps. That's what it was. There were people inside that were being violent and most of them, I can't imagine that many people were acting on their own free will. Hear me out. It seems like these are the type of people that are, they call people sheeple and yet they are the most gullible fucking paranoid people you'll ever meet. I wonder if, it really just boiled down to peer pressure. And I also wonder if, much like we saw with the, Black Lives Matter protests over the summer, of which I was a huge proponent, at the time, I wonder if, there were some agents provocateurs on the QAnon side. On the people storming the Capitol, people that are in there just to escalate a little more. Because my whole thing with conspiracies and QAnon, which I don't know how many times I need to reiterate, I am not a QAnon person. I'm not a right-wing conspiracy apologist or theorist. I believe in objective conspiracies, some of them, some that aren't you know, necessarily from one political side or another, but rather from the thing that controls both political sides, which I don't know what that is, because naturally there isn't a whole lot of verifiable information on this type of thing, which is why I don't really give it too much, you know, too much of my energy. And I ultimately don't give a shit, but you know, it would be naive of me to pretend that like these things are patently false and they have no truth or validity to them, or, you know, plausibility to them whatsoever. I think that what QAnon is, I have just an inkling that this is what it might be. Not saying it is definitely, but if we already have the if we already have the mainstream media dividing everybody up, polarizing the left and the right, you know, to either side, and you have, so you have the mainstream media being divisive, and you know, there's, and sure, there's a lot of corporate money in there, a lot of corporate money. The same corporate money that's giving, that's funding mainstream media outlets is also funding political campaigns and you know, super PACs and action and just all these. There's a lot of money in politics that is the same money that's in the information that we see and that's, you know, fed to us. So that's a fact that you have right there. You also have a large group of disenfranchised people who, you know, didn't really have good lives to begin with, but they didn't really know it because they were force-fed this whole notion. They're force-fed a bunch of lies of like what this country, you know, or like they were given all these different really baseless reasons to be prideful of their nationality when they're never even going to leave the fucking country to go, you know, tour somewhere else. They're just like, yeah, we have a best here. It's like, by thinking you have it the best, what you're doing is just like cutting yourself off from every other possibility. You know, many of which, most of which are much greater than what you currently experience. But you know, just people are devoid of imagination now, and it's unfortunate. But so you have these people, who are just ripe for whatever bullshit you want to feed to them. And then you have a government that has been bought and sold by corporations. And so, yeah, there, you don't have a government that's looking out for people anymore. That is something that we all more or less agree on. What I think QAnon is possibly like, if there are these nefarious, you know, groups or power structures or whoever's at the top and choosing to fuck with people by division, it would make sense to me that they would use that like QAnon would be an intelligence-backed conspiracy cult, just as a means of getting the most gullible people to believe the most insane shit, but with a bit of truth sprinkled in. Because a lot of the stuff, you know, like a lot of these Q people are big, you know, big fans of Alex Jones, big fans of, you know, all these, you know, like Infowars.com and shit like that. And, you know, I don't think that those are good, reliable outlets, but, you know, you have to hand it to Alex Jones when a lot of the stuff that he's been talking about for a lot of his career has been proven to be true. Obviously Sandy Hook is probably the main thing that fucked him. I'm not saying that like Alex Jones should seek retribution for, or like that his credibility was unjustly tarnished. He's got some seriously batshit ideas a lot of the time, but he's also the guy who broke open the story about, you know, the Bohemian Grove. He knew of an island where rich pedophiles go. And, you know, and that's the thing for me. That's the thing that kind of led me to entertain some of these, you know, conspiracies conspiracy theories out there. The fact that Epstein existed, the fact that he had, you know, notable figures such as Bill Clinton, Bill Gates has flown on his airplane. But, you know, Bill Clinton went to this island, like, he at least flew on the plane upwards of 20 times, went to the island, you know, has been spotted on the island by people that used to work there. I mean, there's just a lot of, I do believe that the world is being run by insanely wealthy, fucked up pedophiles. Yeah, I believe that. But am I going to go storm the Capitol? Because, like, I think, you know, because of, like, so that's the thing. I think their basis of, like, you know, the world is run by pedophiles and we need to stop it. That's probably true. And then there's just all this other bullshit that they throw on there that just causes people to, you know, fight against each other, tear down their own communities and just go break shit and possibly kill other people too. So it's not good, but, you know, but I just have this inkling of a feeling that that this is a that these people aren't just acting on their own accord. They're being fed this information, you know, whether it's from the president directly or, you know, people that advocate for him. You know, and why am I still calling him the president? I feel like when you call P. Mert the president, that's like a dog whistle to some people, just like, oh, you mean you support him because you call him the president? No, it's like he was inaugurated. He was the 45th president. I don't have to say his name, you know, but I do just enjoy calling him P. Mert, because when I see, you know, when I'm driving down the highway in Yucca Valley and I see these people on the corner with their P. Mert, you know, 0202 flags, they're all the, you know, it's Trump 2020 flags, but they're all flying them backwards and they don't realize it, like, because, you know, they're holding the flags in front of them, so they're looking up and they're seeing Trump 2020 right in front of me, but then to the people in traffic, they're seeing the mirror image. It's just P. Mert 0202 and you look like a fucking idiot, because they are. They're fucking morons. And you know, while they are morons, they're also human. So you have these human morons that have some degree of compassion or empathy, or, you know, something. It's they're able to recognize that this is something that's supposed to tug at the heartstrings. Therefore, they convince themselves that it should tug at theirs. You know, because, like, obviously pedophilia is bad, but as long as it, you know, the world is run by ultra wealthy pedophiles, like, maybe it's not so bad to be broke. Like, maybe, sure, you do have, like, broke pedophiles, you know, that terrorize neighborhoods and, you know, schools warn you about them and stuff. But like, maybe those people are really just trying to cut corners and ascend to the ultra elite status. Like maybe, you know, so, like, that's why I don't really care, because as long as I'm broke, I feel like I have no chance of becoming a pedophile. And therefore, that's just like, yeah, you know, like why acquire wealth? Why do that? Why build an empire when you have no interest in fucking children? I like, that's, you know, so that's why I I've learned to enjoy myself in poverty, and I wish that these P. Mert 0202 fucks would as well. You know, you don't have to storm the Capitol, or even protest, you know. I mean, it's seriously hilarious, just how far polarized we've gone, you know, from one end with the Black Lives Matter back in the summer to now with you know, Stop the Steal and just all this bullshit, but it's also bullshit that is being peddled to unsuspecting people, people who have been convinced that the other side is evil and trying to overtake their lives. When everybody around you believes this insanity, it's hard for me to really fault you as an individual, beyond just being, you know, absent-minded, some other euphemism for stupid. I mean, just, you know, no critical thought whatsoever. But I also do think that the reaction, to everything, the ratting isn't good. I don't think that's good. And, you know, I had a friend who went to DC in support of, you know, I don't know what exactly he's supporting. I don't know if he supported the storming of the Capitol and the killing of, a Capitol police officer, and then four protesters died, or rioters, or whatever you want to call them. You know, should I break down the difference between a protester and a rioter in this, like, when we're contrasting this Q shit versus BLM? The Black Lives Matter protests were done in public spaces primarily. Sure, they burned down a Target. Big whoop. This is, and sure, so like the Capitol building is I don't know if it's a public space. I know it's a place where public servants work. You would think, therefore, it would be a public space, but then again, there's like security stuff. So I guess maybe there is still, maybe trespassing is still a thing. I mean, I guess, yeah, it's a government office building. So I guess it's still it just belongs to the government. It's not public. Okay, I guess it makes sense probably. Anyway, so yeah, it is hard to, yeah, honestly, like it's hard to really say what the difference is here, because both sides, I mean, obviously the main difference is very obvious, but like the difference between the motives that they're acting on is actually pretty similar. You know, right wing people are conditioned to believe, you know, me first, you know, everything about my property and my business and blah, 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 just like all these buzzwords of, you know, capitalism. And, you know, and then the left is thinking about like, well, what about like, this is just horrible social inequality. And the police do vilify, you know, minority neighborhoods and people. It's horrible. Neither thought is wrong. You know, like I understand being me first and being selfish. I get that because like I'm a person too and I have an ego, but I mean, I understand it. I just don't think it's well thought through and I don't think it's a good way to live. But there are certain people, there are people out there who, and maybe there's maybe it's most people or at least a lot that's their truth and they're going to live by it. But I had a friend go out there, just to, I don't know, I guess take a selfie in front of the Lincoln Memorial. And then, with the caption, tell me how you feel. I don't feel like that was a productive post, a productive decision. I mean, it's just very provocative. I mean, and I'm like I said before, I don't give a shit. I don't care. That's I'm removed emotionally from the whole thing. But how I do feel for my friend is, in addition to feeling like he's been misguided, I also feel like he's a great father, and I feel lucky that he owns his own business that is, you know, quite lucrative. You know, he's a farmer. So he's got his own farm. He's got his own world that he rarely leaves, except apparently to fly to DC when some shit he reads about on the internet's apparently going down. You know, I'm glad that he didn't storm the Capitol, because, you know, I don't think he's a complete moron or a complete idiot. In fact, I didn't even think he was an idiot until he hit me up being like, hey, have you heard about Event 201? Just like, yeah, I've heard about it. It's probably nefarious in certain ways. It's beyond it's beyond anything that any lowly individual living in poverty can do. Like, I mean, it seriously goes back to like why, like I'm not even trying to stop pedophiles. I've just accepted that the wealthiest, most powerful people in this world either are pedophiles, like they actively seek out children, or they're coerced into becoming pedophiles as a means of getting compromised by, you know, other entities that need to have ultimate control over them. You know, it's a fairly simple tactic. Like you remember the piss tape, the Russia dossier, or the what was it, the Steele dossier on P. Mert. Like it's a tactic that groups in control will use. You know, compromise people to wield control over them. I really don't think I'm insane for saying any of this. If this is the first you're hearing about any of this in general, then I mean, I don't know how that's happened, but you know, if this is the first you're hearing of it from me, then yeah, I mean, I haven't long had these thoughts. I've had these thoughts of like, yeah, we're not, like, the government isn't really in control. Like George, I mean, watch George Carlin's last special, you know, where he talks about rights and rights being imaginary. And I've alluded to that before, but you watch George Carlin, you watch Bill Hicks. These are people who were talking about, you know, like deep state politics well before like Trump took the deep state term and turned it into this buzzword for, oh, well, you're automatically a Trump or a QAnon conspiracy nut. No. I mean, I don't think Oswald killed JFK. There are too many moving pieces that would be too convenient for that to be the case. You know, I mean, same, and the same thing with Epstein, you know, like except we don't know who the Jack Ruby was in this case, you know? I mean, between that judge in New Jersey, whose son was murdered, you know, she was a judge on the, either on one of the Epstein cases or on the Trump case that would have possibly exposed more ties. There are lots of different things that powerful groups, you know, with ties to intelligence will use to control powerful people. I shouldn't have to explain this mechanic. It seems pretty straightforward. You know, like once you let go of the idea that voting is everything and that everything is done through the legal process, you know, in good faith, which, I mean, you hear me say political process in good faith, and you know that that's an oxymoron, you know? But yeah, so in any case, I saw my friend, he posted the picture on Instagram, and I don't give a shit. But you know, then people are saying like I saw somebody commenting on one of his posts, one of his other Q buddies, and he's just like, yeah, you know, I bet that girl didn't even die. Like that's just more bullshit from the fake stream media. And I'm just like, oh Jesus. they will stop at no end. Like there is no, I mean, like I seriously wonder, like, what is the actual depth of QAnon? You know, like what is the future hold for it past January 20th or even past like a month into Biden's presidency? I have a feeling that they've got, I mean, like this is a cult. We saw Jonestown. We know how cult dynamics work. You know, people that have bought in will believe anything that they're told from the cult leader, who conveniently is anonymous. So, but then you have people like Jake Angeli, you know, the Buffalo Man, what does he call himself? The shaman, the QAnon shaman. I mean, that guy, I took one look at that guy and I was like, there's no fucking way you're real. There's no fucking way. But I've also seen some of these Q people, and you know, the thing is, it's not just like people you see bumbling around Walmart who are, you know, QAnon hateful, like, you know, going to the Capitol to rage. A lot of them are actually from like the spiritual New Age community. You know, a lot of them come from like psychedelic factions. And, you know, I do got to say, as somebody who has dabbled quite a bit with psychedelics, you know, there are a lot of things that QAnon promotes, and just, you know, talking about spiritual forces and stuff, that I know what they're talking about. Like I felt that, but I also have to imagine that that's just one of those things while you're tripping, that doesn't, like, that's something that probably, like, you can't take it too literally. You can't integrate it too literally into real life. You know, because, like, sure, psychedelics will tell you the sheer truth about some things. They'll also lead you down. I mean, they can also cause delusions, which is why I don't read into anything too strongly, unless I see that it has amazing benefits. And it's a feeling that I can ride to create something and, you know, to spread more love. But yeah, I mean, like, sure, I've had trips where I thought where I've thought that the CIA was controlling me. Sure, of course I've had those. You know, it lends a little credence to that, you know, to that idea of like, the CIA, you know, running MK Ultra or you know, like MK Ultra still having effects. And I've never even researched MK Ultra. I did not anticipate this being the podcast, by the way. But yeah, you know, like I've had these thoughts. I understand how you can, you know, trip out and then just be like, and just have your mind just totally blown. And then you change your whole life. I did that. I had my first mushroom trip in 2017, and less than a year later, I had quit my job and I uprooted my life. I was like, it's time to change some shit. We got to figure this out. And, you know, it's been a work in progress and it's going great, honestly. You know, but to like act on something that you get while you're tripping, in a way that involves a revolution, easy now. That's like a revolution with force. An art revolution is great. The 60s were awesome for art, you know, for stuff. And obviously that shit got exploited and watered down, but and you know, divided up, got you know, sliced and diced by Charles Manson and the record industry and entertainment and politics. Like, yeah, sure. Because once all the powerful groups saw the power that art and music has on people's psyches, and what they want to do with their life. They're just like, we need to own all of it and fuck the artists, because they're the people that bring, that make people, make actual people feel good, and inspire people to do good and be, you know, all right. It's been a while since I sipped that whiskey. Nice and watered down from that melted ice cube. Yeah, you know, so let's move away from, you know, the shit in DC. That was, yeah. So, you know, I smoked a lot of weed. Cause I also do think that, you know, there are some things, like there are spiritual forces out there. I believe that. You know, I don't believe it adamantly, but I've tripped. I've seen enough to know that, like, there are things out there that cause people to have common feelings. There are forces, you know, and to me, that is a spiritual thing. That is something that is probably dictated by the cosmos. You know, so like astrology and shit like that. Again, don't read too deeply into it, but like as a general guide of, you know, how to live your life, as long as it's aligning with your intuition, fucking go for it. Lean into it. It's producing good and not bad results, and you know, not causing anybody to murder each other. Great. Keep doing, you know, spiritual work. Anyway, so, you know, there's been a vibe. There's been a very big palpable vibe in, you know, really the last few weeks, but obviously things came to a head, you know, last Wednesday. And you know, I've had a lot of trouble collecting all my thoughts, cause I mean, shit is so insane that I don't feel I should be, you know, baseline sober, for it. And that's something that I know isn't a good feeling to have. I know that's something that I should be conscious of and keep in check, cause I don't want to develop a problem, you know? So, and I think by making the conscious decision, because like once I finished a quarter of weed in 6 days, I was like, okay, that is a wake up call right there. Fortunately, it was cheap, because it was grown by a friend of mine, but slow the fuck down, man, you know? Or you know, maybe don't slow down too. Maybe I had slowed down. Maybe I had slowed down too much, and that's why I just fell into, you know, just a week of smoking more weed than I've ever done in an entire week. You know, and I don't think it's a bad thing necessarily. I think it's important that we all go through different things so that we learn. You know, and I was talking about this last week, I think. About how, you know, how much I appreciated the struggles I went through with my family over the summer, because it allowed me something horrible to bounce back from. You know, there is always going to be an equalizing power. And this is, again, this is back on the spiritual thing, that they're not, you know, there's something that we all know to be true. And it's not independent of spirituality. Like I think it's, you know, it's okay to, you know, explore your own nature and, you know, like it's okay to get tripped out by life sometimes. It's weird what we end up doing. You never would have, like a month ago, I never thought that I would have ended up with two dogs here, by the way. Miracle found her forever home. I'm really, really excited for her. You know, I thought I had found a home for a couple weeks ago. And then we, and then, you know, so the the friend of mine who's, you know, who was going to take her initially, she was in contact with her friend who was also looking to have a dog. And, you know, so she was just like, why don't you just come over here? And I'm getting way ahead of myself, or just I'm getting the order of the story all wrong. But in any case, Miracle found her new home. She's going to be going to, because like the thing is, so I'm going to try this story over again. So a friend of mine who is going to adopt Miracle and basically raise her, or, you know, not raise her, but keep her as, you know, a watchdog for her property and a playmate for her, you know, already existing dog, her incumbent dog. You know, that was initially going to be the plan, but then she has a friend who lives off the grid, and he has never, this is the longest he's gone without a dog. It's been about 2 years since his last dog passed. And he met Miracle on Saturday, and they hit it off. You know, they hit it off. It was such a beautiful union of souls. Like, this dude's a scruffy older guy. I hope he doesn't mind me saying. But Miracle, like he you know, bent down and said, "Hey, Miracle, come here." And she did. And, you know, it was special because Miracle doesn't do that with me. You know, she loves me, but like, she knows that Clancy and I got her thing. And I don't know. I don't know what she thinks exactly, but there has been a very apparent dynamic between the three of us that that basically I'm Clancy's stepdad. And she, but she's still her mom. But ultimately Clancy's the focus. I don't own Miracle, that at least that's as far as she's concerned. So I'm really excited for her to go to her forever home, this coming weekend. You know, I absolutely love having these dogs here. It's been great. They've added a whole bunch of structure and responsibility to my life. Even in light of all the weed, I've been doing all the work too, which is probably why I've been smoking all the weed. You know, it's stressful. It is stressful to raise two dogs in a one bedroom apartment where I don't really have a yard that's suitable for dogs to be running around in. It's pretty small. And I've got a China berry tree that I have to get taken down or do something to divert the berries from falling into the yard, because apparently they're really toxic to dogs, and if they eat the ripe berries, it can kill them. So obviously I don't want my dog to get poisoned. So I've just been taking them to the dog park, and that's been a really good time. Cause we go in the morning when nobody's there. We've actually gone each of the last four mornings, to the dog park. It's been tremendous. It's been great. Cause we're the only ones there, so they can just run around. And I just let them go for like over an hour. And while they're running around, cause like they don't really fetch balls or anything. They don't like doing that. They're social dogs, and they're territorial dogs. So, you know, I just walk around the edge of the perimeter doing laps. I walked a couple miles today, so got my steps in. And they like it because it gives them something to do. Cause like I'm patrolling the perimeter, and then they're, you know, maybe 100 yards behind or 100 feet behind me, keeping up the rear, or holding up the rear, bringing up the rear. That's what it is. Yeah, it's just a great time. Also, I gotta say, I love walking with these dogs. I just love being responsible for dogs, because with how much walking I've had to do with them, My mood has improved. My posture getting better. I'm talking with more people because, you know, when you're at a dog park and you're just trying to let the dogs fuck off for a while, it's what you end up doing. You end up talking about your dogs and be like, oh, you have such a cute dog. And you say it to everybody. And some people are actually super cool and super, super nice and everything. And they're actually really fun to talk with. You know, so like there are a few people I've met that I like quite a bit. And I would never have met them otherwise, probably. So it's been cool. I met people following, you know, who are, I met this one girl who was, you know, she was just stopping through Joshua Tree for a little bit, in her van. So I met van people and they're fucking rad. I met a guy who works for Google. And, you know, generally I'm inclined to say fuck that guy, but he was nice. We had a good conversation. He's got a really sweet dog and, you know, good on him. He's got, he can afford to own a house out here plus rent in San Francisco. Buy your house. Be cool. You know, like that's my thing. The desert is, you know, it's become more of a destination for people during the pandemic, from LA, from all these ritzier places, as a means of like getting back in touch with themselves. So their mind can be at peace because they realize when you live in an uber populated place and you've been, just sort of under this hypnosis of, you know, go to work every day and, you know, make all the stuff. You don't realize how insane it is to actually live like that. And you want a little peace when everything's stagnant and in a holding pattern. So it makes sense. Come out to Joshua Tree. And I have no problem with that. So long as you respect the desert. You know, like the guy was telling me, yeah, you know, we tried to have a vegetable garden, but the rabbits kept coming in. And I'm just like, you gotta give up on landscaping in the desert. Like, lean into what the desert can provide, because there are some absolutely immaculate, beautiful labyrinths that people have, you know, and they're in the sand, you know, they do stuff with like sand and rocks and succulents and other desert shrubbery. It's actually quite workable. It's just when you try to force things that aren't native to the desert to grow here, and then you get frustrated when the native animals are just like, ooh, new food source going in. No, you're the fucking newcomer, and the ecosystem should not be disturbed just because you got tired of living an insane San Francisco life, you know? But luckily he gets that. And it humors me that Google gives its employees branded down jackets, like North Faces, that, you know, would normally retail for like $300 or something, probably. Like I have a down jacket from Uniqlo that I remember I paid $120 for. I got it on clearance. Normal price was $180. The idea that a company will get you like a really good piece of clothing, that is weird to me, to think that people would accept that and be like, there's no way that my company's doing anything nefarious, or, you know, to fuck with people. There is an ugly belly to the North Face. You know, I all right, that's just whiskey. Oh boy. Oh God, I got looped into a group text that shouldn't exist. You know those texts. So last week, my friend Sonny turned 67 years old. And this dude is an enigma. This guy lives out in Wonder Valley, you know, where I play most of my music. And it's my favorite place to hang out, just because the people out there are just one of a kind. They're way more down to earth. They're no bullshit. So my friend, one of my friends turned 67 years old, and this guy, he's like an authentic desert hippie, you know, like this is a dude who's, from the original hippie movement and everything. And like just a relic of the past. And I fucking love that. So he sent me a text, you know, come over and jam with him on his, you know, to ring in his 67th trip around the sun. And it was just such a fun time, because like, you know, it's mid late afternoon, sunsets, we're you know, I've got my electric guitar there, we got our buddy Jimmy over there playing bass, and then Sonny's on drums sort of. he's a spacey dude, so he gets, you know, distracted, wants to do other stuff, and so he'll, you know, dabble in the cymbals for a bit, and then, you know, walk somewhere else to take care of another thing. But it's just like, it's that kind of just, I don't know, off-grid desert fluidity that just brings me a lot of warmth to my soul. So we're playing music, and that was really fun. And then the next day, I got looped into a group text, because I guess he had signed a moveon.org petition. Yep, that's what it was. And he looped everybody into a group text asking for people to donate money to something. So I just got another a text from a different text thread with the same people in it. People are just like, how do we get out of this text thread? It's a real pain in the ass. Old people and group texts are amazing. I love it all. It entertains me to no end. Is that Miracle that's snoring? Or is that Clancy? That was Clancy. Okay. So maybe you guys heard it. But yeah, these dogs, since I took them to the dog park this morning, we were there for over an hour. I walked a couple miles. They ran around a whole bunch. So Miracle's passed out on my bed. Clancy's passed out in her dog bed on the floor. And now I'm able to do my podcast in peace. And thank fucking God for that, because I tried to do this in a few other attempts in the last couple days, and the dogs just weren't having it. you know, so I remember a few weeks ago when I announced that this would become a video podcast, I was thinking like, this is going to be really hard to manage. And it is, it has been very difficult for me to figure out how to structure, my day in a way that allows me to set aside like a good amount of time to do this podcast, to record, you know, for about an hour, and then to, you know, then edit and upload and export and all that stuff. And, you know, obviously not the exact order of operations, but, yeah, this has been a really interesting adjustment process. Cause that's the thing that I need to keep, you know, reminding myself about, is that I'm still learning, always. And like, it doesn't matter what I do. Anytime that I decide I'm going to do something new, I'm going to be learning how to do that thing, even if it's a minor thing, such as adding video to a podcast. You know, I know how to do it technologically. You know, I'm savvy enough with the computer and with YouTube and Anchor to figure that out. But when it comes to like structuring my actual day and making and creating a schedule that I can keep, that weighs on me. That's something that I got to feel out, because, you know, there is, and we're going to go back under the astrology thing for a minute. You know, I am an Aries, and it is a typical Aries thing that we don't care for routine at all. And maybe I didn't need to bring up my zodiac sign, to state that as a fact about myself, but you know, it is so true. I stagnate. Like stagnation is my biggest pet peeve. So, you know, I like to change up. Like I like to create a rough routine and then adhere to that for a little bit and then scrap it and find something new again. And that's so to find the time consistently to record this podcast on video and then do all the upload, it takes, I'm still feeling it out. I'm still committed though to doing this podcast every week. And, you know, even if it's going to come out a little later, some weeks than others, you know, like I used to release this podcast on Thursdays, exclusively. And then that turned into Friday, Saturday ish. And then, now we're Tuesday. We're a full 5 days behind. And that's not that I honestly think that's just an OCD thing now that I'm thinking about. Well, no, it isn't. Here's what I was thinking about while I was walking around earlier. Back when I worked for Tops, my boss once gave me, I had gone to him, because I was concerned that, you know, I wasn't getting that I had very little editorial control over the product when in fact, my job title was content producer. So you figure that one out. And then he told me, instead of being helpful, my boss told me, what you need to do is think of yourself as the CEO of your app. You're the CEO. So you're the guy that's making all the decisions and you need to think of yourself in that authoritative manner. You know, you're in that position of power. And I mean, this guy is an idiot. Let me just get that out of the way. His nickname was Downsy Cyclops because his eyes were really close together and he generally had like minus his personality, he had a lot of features that were you know, consistent with Down syndrome. You know, like just in the face and absolutely nothing else. Like his personality sucked, and every Down syndrome person that I've met has been wonderful. So he definitely didn't actually have Down syndrome, but he just looked like it a little bit. And sure, if Cyclops had Down syndrome, like maybe that would have made Cyclops more evil just because he's on the evil side. I don't know anything about Greek mythology. I don't know if Cyclops was actually evil, but in any case, that was his nickname, Downsy Cyclops. And he wasn't, a critical smart guy. If not for the fact that he's a complete coward, I would think there's a chance he's in DC, for the Capitol thing. But I was thinking about this. He was telling me you need to be the CEO of Tops Bunt, the app. And this is coming on the heels of the first year that, you know, I didn't get a bonus. And I'm just like, how the fuck can you call me? How can I think of myself as a CEO when I'm not getting paid shit? Like how am I supposed to think of myself as a CEO when I have to move apartments because I can no longer afford Crown Heights, that, by the way, I could easily afford when I first moved into the neighborhood 2 years prior to that. You know, how the fuck is that the case? Like what CEO is worried about, you know, getting evicted? But it made me think like what he meant by it was, it is up to me. I need to take the power into my own hands. You know, as much of an idiot as this guy is always will be. He was right about this certain thing. Like it's a matter, it's a psychological thing. You know, forget the semantics, forget how fucking absurd an analogy it was. I need to figure it out for myself, how I'm going to execute what I set out to do. And so I don't think that means a full-fledged routine all the time. But the whatever it does mean, it's going to be a process. That's what it means. It means it's going to take some time to figure out. And I just hope that I am able to keep this thing above, afloat. And that I get a little more proactive. I mentioned the last 2 days I've been trying to record. That's just a result of procrastinating. You know, I procrastinate a lot, especially when it comes to a big project such as doing an hour long podcast. Maybe there's a little too inside baseball, but Oh man, I've had a lot of thoughts this week. A lot has gone down. There have been so many things, and one of them has been, this. Like I said, there is always going to be a balance, no matter what kind of shit you're going through, and with all the weed that I've been smoking in the last week, it's made me think. I need to clarify my vision. I need to add a little more to my vision board, I think, maybe even change some stuff up. And basically retool my manifesting, because right now I feel like it's a little too vague. I'm thinking about comedy, and I'm thinking about music a lot, and I'm thinking about the dogs. And I'm also thinking about how am I going to use all 24 hours in the day to the best of that I can. And so this came to me in the shower yesterday. But I'm thinking like, I'm doing myself a disservice by not trying to write funny songs. And to expand on that, what I think I need to do is combine my music and comedy. This is something that to do it is very difficult as a stand-up, as is music. And like, here I am combining both things because like, I do have the talent. I have the talent definitely musically, and I'm naturally funny. I just need to actually write the shit. Cause here's how I'm thinking about it. When I do stand up and I'm doing just regular jokes, I forget my jokes all the time. And just cause like I lose my focus so easily and I go on all these tangents. And because to me, that's interesting. To a lot of people, though, it's not. I know that I don't have the most popular podcast in the world because I see the metrics, and I appreciate everybody that does listen because that means you're appreciating who I am. You're appreciating me. And thank you so much. But I also know that if I'm going to make a career and, where I'm getting paid for stuff, like I need to find a way to tap into a market. And so like right now, it's like, I don't know what my music is going to sound like. But I have to imagine it's going to be something sort of trippy, sort of psychedelic sounding. And I'm trying to find stuff to write about that I think is humorous or funny. And it could literally be anything. I could write a song about helping Sonny upload a file, teaching, because he's 67 and doesn't know how Dropbox works, but knows just enough about computers to know that Dropbox is a thing. Why would I not write a song about, helping an old man who's my friend upload a file? And then at the end of uploading the file, he gives me a gram of hash. Fucking cool. And it's funny. Like, I think it's hilarious. And you know what? Here's the thing. If it's not funny, at least the music will be good. But it's weird. I'm not married to this idea, but it just makes a lot of sense to me. I love talking. I love stand-up, and I love making people laugh. you know, when I'm on stage or even like, you know, since I haven't been able to get to open mics at all in the last few weeks, I've, you know, like I'll start riffing material in front of people at the dog park, you know, just in conversation, I'll start talking with them, you know, humorous things about Clancy and Miracle that they do. Like, you know, they sing along with the ambulance sirens and they're actually good mimics. You know, shit like that. There's other stuff. Well, okay. Here's one example. Like, you know, so Clancy, I've learned she is my soulmate. And one of the reasons I know that is that she is also an empath. Because like she cares a lot. Like she doesn't bark too much because I think she thinks it'll upset other people. But she does growl at her squeaky toys because they make sound. I think she's growling and like making little yips at the squeakers because she empathizes with the toy. Doesn't realize that, you know, that it's, that it doesn't have a pulse, that it's not a non-living thing. She knows it's not a dog and not a mammal, but she thinks the toy has feelings because it makes sounds when she bites it. And maybe that's something that she'll outgrow with age once she figures out the world. But, you know, but it's shit like that that's fucking funny. And I'm sure there was a punchline or something that I'd figured out in the moment. The people in the dog park were laughing. Okay. Whew. But yeah, I'm going to enjoy the last few days that I have Miracle. Yeah, you know, just keep it going with what I'm doing. And like, yeah, I'm going to try and see what I can do with music and writing songs that are funny. Because yeah, I just think that is a unique approach that I can take as an individual creative person. You know, sure, there are other guitar singer-songwriter comics out there, and a lot of them are good. Most of them are terrible. And that is the biggest thing that's keeping me from, that has kept me from really exploring that, is just that there's this, you know, people look down on musical comics sometimes, and a lot of the time it's for good reason. Like, they suck, and you know, or they don't suck, but like, they're not, you know, well, yeah, they do suck because they haven't figured themselves out yet. Like, they don't know what they're doing yet. They're playing like an acoustic guitar and it's nothing original. They're like playing songs that, because if you're playing, I don't know, like, it seems like if you're playing acoustic guitar and playing funny songs that you write, like, you're trying to basically be Tenacious D, and they were so fucking good that it seems like, what the fuck are you doing by even attempting? But now I'm saying the shit and I'm just like, you fucking moron, you naysaying, pessimistic fuck. I was gonna say like anti-optimist, but I was like, no, what's the opposite word? What's the like, I don't need to make my own what do you call him, fucking, the thing when you connect words, when you hyphenate them, fucking, it doesn't matter. But like, I remember when I was in first grade, I learned about like what that type of word was called. It was like some, you know, not a contraction, but it was something along those lines of, a compound. Yeah. A compound word. That's what it was. Yeah. Got it. So anyway, now that I remember the phrase compound word, I think we can end this podcast episode. Thank you very much for listening, for subscribing to my YouTube channel, and also for following me on Instagram And yeah, that's really the only social I use. I greatly appreciate it. So yeah, I'm going to stop talking now and I'll talk to you again next week. Bye.